Tired of ads interfering with your favorite sports podcasts? Good news. Ad-free listening is available on Amazon Music for all the music plus top podcasts included with your Prime membership. Stay ahead of the game by downloading the Amazon Music app for free or go to amazon.com/sportsadfree. That's amazon.com/sportsadfree to catch up on the latest episodes without the ads.
Millions of people have lost weight with personalized plans from Noom. Like Evan, who can't stand salads and still lost 50 pounds.
Salads generally for most people are the easy button, right? For me, that wasn't an option. I never really was a salad guy. That's just not who I am. But Noom worked for me.
Get your personalized plan today at Noom.com. Real Noom user compensated to provide their story. In 4 weeks, the typical Noom user can expect to lose 1 to 2 pounds per week. Individual results may vary.
Hello and welcome to the Roper Report Exiles Extra podcast in association with Vaux Breweries. I'm Brett Lyons-Davis from Milton Keynes, and this week on the pod we're talking about the lads' back-to-back wins over Ipswich and Rochdale. We'll be chatting some more about the International Fans Weekend, which one of the Exiles gang was actually part of. John Stacey catches up with Oxford fan George Elek, who's from Athletic and NTT20 Pod, plus your letters and, of course, playing away. This week, I'm joined by Martin Wanless, all the way in Australia. Good evening, good morning.
How are you, Martin? Good morning, whatever time it is.
It's 8 o'clock here in the UK. What time are you over there?
Excellent. It's 7 o'clock in the morning. Yes, I've just rolled out of bed, had a very strong cup of coffee, left the kids with some devices while I slope off to my deluxe recording studio to talk to you guys.
And slightly off air, I'm sure you won't mind me mentioning it. What have you got to clean up once this is finished?
There wasn't catch you.
What a fantastic start to the morning. I've also got Paul Hunter, who is in London. Paul, how are you doing?
Yeah, greetings. Yeah, very good. Very good, Brett. Yourself? Good.
Yeah, I'm very well, thank you, mate.
Good
very
stuff.
Well. Obviously, you was up Sunderland at the weekend, weren't you, for the Ipswich game?
Back home, sort of showing my face the weekend. Yeah. Good to be there. Good for them to see me. So, yeah.
So we'll catch up a little bit about that. But first, I've got to introduce our third guest today. Now, you might have seen it out there on the social media. A fantastic goal was scored on Saturday during the halftime challenge. He is a giant among men, the fighting pride of Ireland. Michael, the Dublin Destroyer, Dunn. How was your weekend, sir?
Dublin Destroyer, that's a first.
I really like that one.
Oh, it was unreal. Great weekend, I have to say. Really, really good. Just about recovered now. Met on most of the Roker Report boys on Friday. And those lads can drink as well as I can, in fairness. So it made a good night out of it.
Yeah, so because obviously a lot of people have only seen like what's been put on social media. We've seen some like behind the scenes footage as well in our WhatsApp group. And it looked like you boys had a very good drink up.
You can always rely on the Irish for a drink up, in fairness. Yeah, it was brilliant though, in fairness. Like the Friday in the Fans Museum was really good. It's just when you get to things like that, when you see all the fans that come around the world, like there was lads from Taiwan, Canada, where else was everywhere, Holland, Bulgaria, Denmark. You kind of just realise then how far and wide this club reaches. Like there's lads everywhere all over the world that the club means so much to, which was a really nice part of it, because you got to meet loads of different lads with loads of different stories, as some might have heard in that other podcast. But it was brilliant. Yeah,
well, that's what was one thing I was going to mention actually. If you've not heard the podcast about the International Fans Weekend, obviously listen to this one first, then listen to that one. There's fans from America, Taiwan, Sweden, Bulgaria, Canada, Ireland, Malta, Holland. There's also interviews from 73 heroes, Bobby Kerr and Mickey Horswell, and also lifelong fan George Forster as well. It's a really, really good pod. So, yeah, have a listen to that. But before I say anything else though, Michael, you've actually done like a lot of our sort of boyhood dreams, and that's to score a goal at the Stadium of Lights. How was that moment for you?
Unreal. First, you don't realise how slippy that pitch is until you start running on it. But no, it was class, I have to say. It was a really nice thing. I think I've watched the video maybe back 100 times maybe since I've got home. And I've also even went into school on Monday. First thing I did before I did anything was show the cold class video as well. So no, it was deadly. But as I said before, if I did that 10 times, I'd probably miss 9. But I'll take it.
Oh, that's a superb finish.
Going back to what Michael said about going into back into school on Monday and showing the class the video of him, it's worthwhile pointing out for the people listening that Michael is a school teacher and not an oversized kid with an alcohol problem. I think that's probably worth clarifying to start with. And by the way, when I was home at Christmas, yeah. I think it's just worth, you know, for clarity. When I was home at Christmas, I went to the Fans Museum for the first time, and it is brilliant. And I would say anybody who hasn't been there, especially if you're making a trip up from outside the area, go to the Fans Museum, have a pint in there. There's some cracking stuff in there, mind. Absolutely fantastic.
Is there a bar inside?
There is, aye. And me and my dad were sat there having a pint before the game, and this old Scottish bloke just rocks up, has a little bit of crack with us, tells us how his right knee still gives him jip from when Norman Hunter ploughed into him. And, of course, it's Bobby Kerr, and you just get these little things. It's brilliant.
There is some great stories from there. And let's talk a bit about the football. There was two games to talk about this week, and 6 points, clean sheets. Can we really complain about anything? I'm sure we'll find something to. But it was, we'll touch very briefly on the Ipswich game. Obviously, like Paul, you was up there for the weekend. So, what were your thoughts on it?
Really, really poor first half. Probably the less said about that, the better. It was sort of, you know, like we'd never met before, to be honest. Awful. And then second half came out a lot stronger, a lot more intent. On the front foot. Didn't really create that many clear-cut opportunities. It had to sort of come down to almost a goal out of nothing, which I guess it was from Maguire. But yeah, no, you take it. You'll take the win. Back three were reasonably solid. But yeah, we'll take it. A big 3 points. I probably would have been more critical if we hadn't won so convincingly last night, if that makes sense. I don't know if maybe we've covered this in the main pod, but I think, the attacking Gooch Maguire has been really good, but I think Parkinson deserves a lot of credit for what have we got, the best defensive record this year in England, I think, in 2020? Could be wrong, but I think that's the case.
I saw the other day, well, before yesterday's game, I said that McLaughlin had the most clean sheets in the country, this like in 2020. So yeah, that's only gone up over the last 24 hours, so...
And the fact that we changed from a back four to a back three, not only mid-season, but mid-crisis, really, after the Bolton game on Boxing Day, to then switch to a back three, which Jack Ross had a full pre-season trying to get right and couldn't do. I think that's gone a little bit overlooked, really, and I think he deserves credit for that.
No, he has done, actually. And one thing isn't getting the credit he actually deserves. Because I know one thing me and my dad were saying the other day about it, that obviously Boxing Day people are calling for his head, that there's not been a Parkinson's Red and White Army chant have gone up yet. You know, are people still on the fence with him? I'll pass over to Martin, actually.
I don't think he is getting the credit he deserves, but I think that's probably because of the horrendous start he had. And I think while he has done, the team's done really, really well since Boxing Day. We had that horrendous run of 12 or 14 games or whatever it was at the start of his reign. I think one of the things that I was really critical of Jack Ross in his time here was that he didn't set a real style of play. He didn't set a real formation. He didn't have a settled team. Parkinson's done that. If that's style of play, I think that the style of play he's put in, it's actually quite reminiscent of the Peter Reid era, where we're on the front foot, we're in people's faces, we're closing people down. And, you know, we have got a bit of attacking intent from the wings. Obviously, a different formation to what the Peter Reid team was. But I think Parkinson does deserve a lot of credit for what he's done. I think, obviously, the proof will be over the next month or two. We've got some big games coming up. And, you know, if we can keep this run going, he's given us a chance of automatic promotion, which... on Boxing Day, I thought would be a wild fantasy.
Well, say Boxing Day, I think the only way we were going to get out of League One was by going to League Two. We was in a real sorry state of affairs, and I think fair play to him. The guys, it must have been horrendous for him, you know. And he's only human to be sat, you know, on the touchline, that the crowd singing, you know, get out of our club, singing for Kevin Phillips, and he has. Dug in, he's got his game plan going, and so I think full credit to him. But as you say, you know, proof is in the pudding. You know, we do need to obviously get promoted, but at the moment things are going the right way, and yeah, let's sort of be positive about it. one thing a few people sort of came out and said, going out saying about the Rochdale game yesterday, and Michael, I'll jump on you for this one, was obviously 3-0 up at half time, coasting. What do you want us to do after half time? Do you want us to push for more goals? Were you happy that we sort of sat back, took off the gas a little bit? What would you like to have seen happen yesterday?
Like, it's a hard one, really, isn't it? Because obviously you want to keep going the way you are, but I think it's just natural psychologically. If you're 3-0 up, you just put your foot off the gas even 5-10%, and if every player is doing that, it does make a difference. I mean, obviously we had a really good start yesterday. You nearly think in positions like that, the way it's been going lately, you know, Parkinson's been keeping the same team for week in, week out. I think he's only made maybe one or two changes in the last 5-6 weeks. I mean, it's only between Lynch and Flanagan really in defence that's been changing. Last night probably could have been a good opportunity for him to make a couple of changes. I actually was expecting him to make a few changes to the starting lineup from the start, because, you know, he's bought a few players in, he's scouting, even Lafferty. Like, I expected Lafferty to start last night. So I was thinking maybe, I saw we were 3-0 up, I was expecting him to maybe bring Lafferty on and Scowen and maybe even Watmore or someone just for game time. Because in fairness, Parkinson said today, those lads are really chomping at the bit. And it's only the fact that the lads who are in the starting lineup at the moment have really upped to the level that it's just so hard to get into the team at the moment. But I think he could have really, maybe he's very slow to make changes. Even on Saturday when we were drawing, I was just like, who is he going to bring on? It was 67, 68 minutes, I think, when he brought Lafferty on. And obviously within 2 minutes, he scored. But you have to give him credit for that. He made the right decision. But maybe sometimes he can be a little bit slow to make substitutions. That's just something I've noticed over the last few weeks. But really, I'm clutching at straws because I can't complain. We're playing so well at the moment.
No, and that, I'll say, that is the difficult thing. It's because I was saying our WhatsApp group yesterday, I said at half time, I'd have brought on 3 of the new lads. You know, I'd love to see Scowen come on, Semenyo, and again, Lafferty up front, just to give them that game time, because we're going to need them. You know, throughout the rest of this season, these lads are going to be coming in at some point. Obviously, Maguire came off with an injury. It didn't, I think at the time it looked, I mean, he might have been playing up to it a little bit, but it looked worse. It's apparently a bit of a dead leg, but there's no sort of fears.
Yeah, dead leg,
for the
week. Yeah.
There's no fears for the weekend. So, Paul, yourself, where do you sort of sit on this? Are you sort of happy with yesterday, or would you? I say it's hard to say. Were you happy because we won 3-0? So obviously happy. But yeah, we've been extra critical for the sake of it. So
yeah, I think when it gets to 60 minutes and you're 3-0 up, you should be making 2 changes, maybe leave one spare in case someone gets injured. But when our two key players, Gooch and Maguire, quite, I don't know if you'd call them injury prone, but they've had their injuries in the past. Yeah, you should be thinking about making more changes to rest them legs, especially when we've got a lone striker who, in my opinion, is very ineffective. Let's see what Laffer can do with, you know, 30, 35 minutes, in my opinion. Yeah, maybe we're nitpicking, but to me, it's just common sense, especially when we've got a big away game on Saturday as well.
Yeah, because the games are coming. They come thick and fast in this league, aren't they? It's literally Saturday, Wednesday, most of the time. So I would make some changes. Martin, looking ahead though for Saturday, I think realistically he's going to keep the same 11. But would you tweak anything at all?
Oh, look, I think he will keep the same 11. I think it's fairly predictable now. I actually think it's like a bit of a throwback to when I started, probably when we all started watching football, because you can name the starting 11 without a great deal of difficulty. I'd probably keep the same team. I would definitely have made changes on Tuesday. I would have given, as the other lads have said, given some of the new boys some game time. I would have certainly took Dobson off at half time on Tuesday because he's on 9 bookings. And I think I would have just made sure he was available for Saturday. But he got through that game without yellow card, so he is available. So yeah, unchanged team for me. I think the only one, I agree with what Paul said about Charlie Wyke. Really, I think he's not effective in terms of goal threat. He obviously adds something to the overall play, but you know, Lafferty's performance at Portsmouth in the second half, where he had a chance, it was probably our worst 45 minutes for a few months. He didn't do himself any favors. There was nothing that he showed on that performance that he should be getting the game anytime soon. So yeah, I think unchanged size.
In Wyke's defence, and sort of almost playing devil's advocate a little bit, for the, I think it was Gucci's for my stream that I was watching, I missed both the first and third goal of the game. So I don't know which way round this was.
But I think well, I missed the second, so we had a full house there.
Right? Yeah, we missed them all between the pair of us. Maguire, I think it was, crosses it in, and the defender's focusing on Wyke, who sort of drags him. So Gooch then slips in and's out of side foot into the corner. So I think he does have a job, Wyke, of, you know, defenders. Even if it's down, I understand, maybe I'm sort of, you know, giving some credit. Yeah, well, you know, but he is a handful for defenders. Defenders do want to, you know, have to keep an eye on him for crosses going into the box. Yeah, so he has got a purpose, I believe.
Can I just say something about Wyke? I noticed on Saturday, for a chap who's the size of him, the height of him, he doesn't win nowhere near enough headers in the air, like from kickouts or long balls coming into him. I think he spends more time trying to back into defenders and winning free kicks than actually using his physicality and winning, knocking balls on, because there were so many times on Saturday that he was backing in, dropping to the ground, looking for free kicks, instead of actually just using his physique and getting in there and getting stuck in. And I think he just, like, if he's going to do that, I'd rather him off the pitch, to be honest, and put Lafferty in, someone who probably would spend more time actually being more of an aerial threat. I think Wyke he's just not doing enough for me at the moment to really start. That's just my opinion anyway.
Yeah, it's
all about opinions. And as I was just trying to give some balance to it, if anything, because we're all having a go at him and we keep winning games, so.
Sorry about that.
No, you're fine, mate, you're fine. And as we've obviously taken on the extra responsibility, our man John Stacey is catching up with George Ellick. George is everywhere. He's on NTT20 Pod, The Athletic. He's on Sky Sports, Radio 5 Live. Plus, for this weekend, he's an Oxford fan. So I'll pass you over to John.
I'm John Stacey, and I'm here previewing the Oxford United match, joined on the line by George Ellick, a massive Oxford United fan from the Not the Top 20 podcast, easy for you to say, and The Athletic's Sewing Up, Going Down pod. George, how you doing? You all right?
Yeah, very good. Very good. Thank you.
Good. Yeah, so we'll get cracking straight into it. Oxford, 10th in the league at the moment, going through a bit of a rocky patch. Following from what can only be said is a pretty awesome couple of months, really. October, November, you kind of won almost every game, and a bit of a dodgy set December with the cup distractions, probably. But in the last six, you've only won one. I guess, really, straight away, I want to get your thoughts on how things are going at present, really, for Oxford. Mainly looking, I mean, my personal perception of it is losing your two better performers in Fosu Henry and Baptiste in the January window. But what's your thoughts on how it's going at the minute?
It's hard to be particularly positive, given, I mean, as you've said, the league form is pretty poor. Good to get a very late equaliser at Burton, but realistically, kind of picking up the odd draw here and there when you're pushing for a playoff place isn't great. And, you know, a couple of weeks ago, or kind of 4 weeks ago or so, we were coming second in the league. And I think people were pretty positive that we were going to be at least challenging for automatics with the kind of playoffs to fall back on. So definitely tricky. I mean, you touched on the cup run, and that has undoubtedly had a massive effect on this season, because our league form was so good. And then we just have to play so many matches. We had Steve Bruce, a man who I assume isn't too popular with the listeners, and maybe not too popular with Oxford fans either. After the replay where he came out and said it was, you know, it was the worst thing, the last thing his team needed. And Carl Robinson made the point afterwards, saying, well, actually, we've already played 10 games more than this season, and we've got another 9 games to come in February. So, you know, the fixture congestion has certainly played its part. You mentioned Fosu and Baptiste, and losing them has certainly impacted us. But what I would say is that the league form had already started to tail off before they left. Fosu wasn't in great form when he did leave as well. So it would be easy for us fans to blame that for the current run of results. But I think it's only probably played a small part.
Interesting, really. You touched on like the poison chalice of like a cup run and stuff like that. And we've had a few, obviously, cup runs over the last couple of seasons, especially last season with the Chequer trade. So I can totally sympathise with how it affects the league form a little bit. Although I'm certainly not putting our status in League One still being down to the Chequer trade, because it's more than that. But touching on kind of losing Baptiste and Fosu, there wasn't really any significant major transfer activity in over the January window. There was a couple of loans and Liam Kelly came in, which I think is a quality player. But Carl Robertson's kind of openly said when he lost those two players that like the squad is definitely weakened with them. The start of the season, and like you've alluded to, Oxford, you know, they looked really great. And for me, I was thinking they were going to be challenging this year.
Yeah.
With losing Fosu and him being kind of, I was just looking at the stats, doing a bit of homework before, him being one of the sort of main scorers actually from midfield, he was in double figures.
Yeah.
How do you feel like the rest of the season is looking following on from the January transfer window and what have you?
Yeah, I think people at the club would say that if you flip the window and Baptiste and Fosu left on the 1st of January and we brought in Liam Kelly, Marcus Brown, Nathan Holland on the 31st of January, people wouldn't have been so upset. Mm. And there's probably some truth to that. Marcus Brown is a quality player. We had him last season. You might remember he was the one who Max Power tripped on the halfway line at the Stadium of Light and was sent off in that game. But he's a guy who personally, I mean, obviously Tarik Fosu is our player and Marcus Brown's on loan. But if you offered me either one of them for the rest of the season, I would take Brown without question. Mm. Holland is a bit of an unknown quantity, on loan from West Ham. He's a player that West Ham fans seem to be very keen on, but we're yet to really see the best of him. He scored a very good goal in that Newcastle replay. So in terms of looking forward, I think, and the January transfer window, whilst losing Baptiste and Fosu is a big blow, I think Oxford fans are more disappointed that we didn't replace Chris Cadden, who's a player who was linked to Sunderland as well as Oxford in the summer. And he was an attacking right back. He played on the right-hand side of midfield for Motherwell and for Scotland. And we brought him in and played him at right back. And he was a very, very creative outlet for us down our right-hand side. And we haven't replaced him. Sam Long is playing right back, who's a more defensive-minded player. And Josh Ruffles, our left back, is also more defensive-minded. So that has been, I would say, the big area where we've struggled to create chances, where we used to have such a good outlet. And that is probably the area where, looking forward, looking ahead to the season, I mean, if we can keep Matt Taylor fit, who's a quality striker at League One level, if we can fill, you know, if Marcus Brown can fill Tarik Fosu's boots, then we should be okay. But we've really lost a bit of spark and you know, playing against a side with one flying fullback is a much harder proposition than playing against one with a flat back four. And at the moment, that's the switch that we've made.
We're obviously playing the wing backs at the moment, and it really does feel like we either have one playing amazing for two or three games in a row, and the other one completely invisible, or we kind of have them both doing really well going forward, but then they can't defend, and you kind of can't get the consistency. So although you kind of worried about that, perhaps you never know, they'll surprise you and they'll start coming forward and bombing
forward.
Fingers
crossed. Really good. Yeah. If Sam Long can suddenly become a £1 million right back, I'll be very surprised. But hopefully you're right.
That's it. I mean, so you touched on Marcus Brown. I mean, was he former West Ham or something?
Yeah, like? He was on loan from West Ham last year, and then Borough picked him up.
So would it be him, or would you rate another player perhaps that is the kind of key linchpin for the rest of your season going forward? I know Matty Taylor's scored a few and what have you, so
I think Taylor staying fit is probably the most important thing to our season, because the other options up front are either Jamie Mackie, who for all of his antics doesn't really belong up front for a League One side. You've got Dan Adji, who scored on midweek, but he's a raw talent who hasn't seen much first team action. So if Taylor's not fit, as we saw, I mean, Taylor wasn't fit during January, and that's when our form really started to nosedive. And I think, you know, we were linked to Will Grigg in January. I think the club tried very, very hard to bring in just another body, so that if Taylor was out, there was another striker who at least had some kind of goal scoring pedigree at some stage in his career. So I think that's pretty crucial. The other player, I mean, two players in midfield who I'd point out as well. Cameron Brannigan is a player who'll move on in the summer, irrespective of what happens to us. Yeah. He's kind of the next one off the supply line, destined for the top. And he's come back from injury and not been himself since he came back. So him returning to form is another crucial one. And then Alex Gorin, who came through, I think, at Sunderland, slipped through the net. He's kind of the unsung hero in the middle of the park. He's so combative in midfield that basically whenever he gets booked, Carl Robinson looks to take him off pretty quickly, because you know that the second yellow card isn't far away.
I've seen that with him. I've seen when he came off in a game. It might have been something I was just catching in the highlights or something, but he came off in the 20th minute or something.
Yeah, exactly.
That's definitely a tactic, because we know that he's got a bit of a hot head, like. But
yeah, that's it. So I think those two midfield, especially with Baptiste gone, and then I mean there are a couple of others. Rob Dickey is another one who'll move on probably in the summer, centre back, and then James Henry is probably the other guy who's been, you know, he's been with us for 3 years, and he's not the quickest, but he's a very, very intelligent footballer who can play either on the right hand side of a midfield three, or he can play kind of on the right hand side of the front three. And he's an intelligent player. He doesn't have that yard of pace. I don't think he ever really has, to be honest. He's one of those guys who you really miss him when he's not there, but he should be fit for Saturday.
Cameron Brannigan, was he Liverpool or
what? Yes.
Yeah, I thought it was Liverpool. Again, another Football Manager youth player that I remember playing it a few seasons ago, maybe. But yeah, no, it seems that quite a lot of, I guess, rejects is a hard word, but sort of like youth players that kind of from the Premier League drop down to League One sides. And if they're a decent club format for them. They do pretty well and they build their way back up, and we've seen quite a lot of that recently. So yeah, interesting you brought up Branigan. It's certainly, when I've seen Oxford play in the past, especially against us, he's looked like one of your better players. So
yeah, I think that's an interesting thing. I mean, as you guys, as fans of Sunderland, coming into a league you probably hope you'd never see again, mm-hmm. I would say, as like as a neutral, your recruitment strategy has been kind of the opposite of what it should be.
Exactly.
Because I mean, even up to the window, I mean, I don't really care what he does from here on in. There are so many players you could have signed ahead of Carl Lafferty that would make more financial sense and more business sense in terms of, you should be, you know, the way that Oxford is run and the way that other teams like Coventry are run, is if you bring in a player, it should be with the intention of him going up in value in his time with the club, and therefore improving the team and hopefully making some money out of it.
Yeah, I think there's a lot of factors that go into play with that, obviously, and we don't know the full ins and outs, but I think from my opinion and looking at it's that weird kind of horrible stigma of a big club mentality. You know, we you know, should we be looking at youth rejects from the Premier League?
Exactly.
Really, we should be looking for big name players in league. Who's a big name player, you know, in this league? And that's why we've made the mistakes we have with Will Grigg and people like that. And
almost, I know it's taken him a while to get going, but Charlie Wyke is down that line where at least he was a player who had his career in front of him and had done better below. And he's someone who probably does have resale value if you can kind of keep him fit and firing. But the interesting thing for us is as well, is that you've got Dave Jones now as your, you know, one of your directors. And he was very much involved at Oxford when the recruitment strategy was implemented, that we would look to kind of technically gifted players coming out of academies who either weren't going to make that step up into the first team or were just desperate to get out and play first team football. So he's got experience of doing that, and he's someone that I know, I'm pretty sure when he's involved with the club, will probably look to adopt at least part of your recruitment strategy being along those lines.
I hope so. I mean, I've seen, you know, a lot of people kind of have these negative sort of spins on these people that were involving with the club, you know, big fans, you know, and when he sort of announced he was non-exec director, I think there was a few sort of iterations and like people going off on one really about the fact that he's just a Sky Sports presenter, you know, he's just, and it's like, you know, if you do a little bit of digging, you can find out more. And actually, from my perspective, because I know he's a fan anyway, I've actually just, you know, it sounds really stupid, really, but seen online on his social media and stuff, the amount of effort he puts in for his actual day job, he knows a lot about the clubs. He knows a lot about the players at the clubs. He has to, otherwise he doesn't look like he knows what he's doing in his day job.
Exactly.
If he can bring that to the club, and he can look at, like you say, if he can look implement a recruitment strategy knowing contacts in the game, then how can that not be a benefit to us? You know, it's not just a figurehead, a name kind of thing. It's
those contacts are important. I mean, I remember. Yeah. I mean, one summer when we lost Michael Appleton, we were, I think, pretty close to appointing Frank Lampard as our manager. That wouldn't have happened if it wasn't for Dave being on our board. And, you know, you can scorn all you want at being mates with those kind of people. But now, you know, Frank Lampard's currently manager of the team with the best youth development in the country. So if he can implement, if he can use that relationship at all to help Sunderland, which I'm sure he probably will, then that can only be a good thing. I mean, these having contacts in the game, especially for a lower league club, I mean, you know, Dave will bring a lot of stuff with him, including experience and like a massive drive to make Sunderland successful. But you can't underestimate how important those kind of contacts might be.
Exactly. Yeah. So just going back to the game.
Got off topic a bit. Yeah.
it's fine. It's absolutely fine. Just going back to the game Saturday. We talked about Gorin. I believe he's suspended, isn't he, on Saturday?
I think he's racked up
a load of yellow cards, which isn't.
If he got, I think if he got booked yesterday, then he will be. Yeah.
Yeah, so that's good for us in a way. But and Liam Kelly's injured, I believe, as well, so it's even better. But with regards to that, and talking about the players you've been sort of chatting about already, but what would be the 1, 2, 3, however many you want to sort of put out there, is the people who might trouble us on Saturday?
Yeah, I mean, I'd say Brown probably top. Just because he is someone on his day. I mean, I've said on the podcast before that even though Jonathan Woodgate's starting to do a better job at Middlesbrough, I mean, if he doesn't think that Marcus Brown can improve that side, then I have literally no faith in him whatsoever, because there's no way he should be playing in League One. And there's no way that a club who are struggling in the bottom half of the Championship should be allowing him out on loan in January, because he has a bit of everything. You know, he's quick, he's skillful, he's very aggressive. I mean, he is not a winger who just gets fouled. He gives it back just as good as he gets. But he's someone who, you know, we all know there's a kind of a clutch of players probably at this level who, when they're really at it, are pretty much unplayable. And he was that the other day against Blackpool when he played as a kind of a false nine. And he, Now, he wasn't very good as well when we played against Newcastle, but he's someone who on his day can really change a game. So I'd say him, I'd say Taylor, because he's just a proper finisher and a proper penalty box striker who does offer you, he's an intelligent footballer as well, he can drop deep and be very effective in that final third as well. He's not just a Will Grigg who doesn't do anything else outside. Not that Grigg does much for you inside either. And then I'd have to say Rob Dickey probably, because of Brannigan's struggles at the moment. He's a centre back who, as I say, he's improving very, very quickly. And he's someone who, I mean, I went to go and speak to Carl Robinson ahead of the Man City game. And Carl said to me that he reckoned he had 5 players who play in the Premier League, and he said he reckons Dickey will play for England. Really? And everything, you know, everything that Carl says should probably come with a little bit of salt.
He's been one of them low league managers that loves the superlative every now and then, a sort of
exactly
massive line. Yeah,
exactly. But it says a lot. I mean, he's someone who's worked with Dele Alli at MK Dons, as he likes to say, and Ademola Lookman at Charlton as well. And he quite clearly holds Dickey in pretty high regard as well. So he's someone to look out for. I don't know if he won't cause you trouble.
No.
At centre back, but he hopefully will stop you from causing us any trouble.
Yeah, he might kick Charlie Wyke a few times.
Yeah, exactly. Ideal.
So last time we played each other, excluding the Tin Pot Cup fixture, which I'll try and forget really.
Yeah, ignore it.
A horrific game, that one. It was the first game of the season we played. We seem to always play you early in the season. Fair to say a lot's changed for both teams since. What do you remember about that game? How different do you think Oxford are now compared to when we played you the first game of the season?
That was a massive game for us because there wasn't much positivity going into that game ahead of the season. I think we hadn't finished our business yet. We hadn't got Taylor in. And I think that game set a very different tone. Because suddenly as far as Oxford fans and we were concerned, we were the better side that day. And not for the first time, we felt like we deserved to come away with 3 points from the Stadium of Light and ended up, as ever, you know, it's always 1-1 between us, 4 in a row. I think I was someone who had been fairly vocal in my criticism of Jack Ross as well. And it was also, as a neutral, it was a sign that things hadn't really changed and that lessons hadn't really been learnt in the summer by the most important people at Sunderland, whether that's the owner or the manager. So, it was quite a telling first game of the season for both sides. And it definitely set the tone for the end of Ross's reign. And it definitely, I think if you'd turned up and beat us, you know, 2 or 3 that day, it would have been very hard to pick ourselves up. But I remember, you know, the positivity and the optimism that came out of it was pretty important to the way we started our season.
I've seen that a lot recently. I've seen kind of teams that you think might struggle against us and we've kind of gifted them a draw or even a win, you know, they tend to go on a bit of run afterwards. And I think I totally echo what you said there. You know, I felt the same with our result, in a sense of this is kind of like definitely telling of what's going to happen over the next couple of months with regards to Ross leaving, being sacked, and kind of the struggles that we were going through. We're trying to sort of narrow down what we're actually going to be doing tactically. And yeah, it was a bit...
He changed for about 30 minutes by playing Elliot Embleton and then panicked and then binned him off to reserves again.
Which was just really insane because, you know, everybody who knows anything about the lads, he needs a bit of consistency, he needs a bit of an arm at him.
Unbelievable.
And he's a quality player.
Yeah.
It's very strange. But anyway, let's move on from that one.
enough about Ross, yeah.
Yeah, yeah. Actually, I'm going to go off on a bit of a tangent, actually. I kind of really wanted to pick your brains a little bit with your sort of lower league sort of nous and your expertise on it. I'm sure you've spoken about this before, but with Sunderland kind of seemingly not fulfilling expectations that everybody has on us to dominate the league, what do you think's missing with us? What do you think we need to do or change? Or are we doing it? Are we on the right track?
I think you're getting there. I mean, I'm glad that Parkey's turned it around, because at least in him, you've got a manager who I'm pretty sure that if you stick by him, I mean, I know a lot of Sunderland fans, despite the recent good form, are still not completely sold. But I think having a guy who has achieved promotion out of this division with far, far less in terms of resource is really important. And he's someone who, you know, the style of football has been a concern in the past, but it feels like that hasn't really been an issue so far with you guys. You're pretty free scoring at the moment. And I think naturally football fans are of an ilk where if you're scoring lots of goals and you're winning lots of games, the style of football sometimes takes a bit of a backseat, no matter what we like to think. So,
absolutely.
I mean, I mentioned, I think the recruitment has been has been pretty poor. Even players who I think have come in and done well, like I think that signing 32-year-old Joel Lynch was a pretty interesting move again, where I know he's dropped down a level, but he's someone who realistically you're probably going to have to move on in 18 months or a year or so. Yeah. I much prefer the signing of Bailey Wright, who's a guy who is a good age and is probably playing now below his level. He's been a consistent performer in the league above. So, yeah, and I think you're starting to see, you know, Denver Hume's emergence has obviously been very positive. Dobson's a really good signing who I think is starting to show his worth now as well after a difficult start. So I think you're getting there. I think, you know, whether or not this season is going to be the one, it's probably like last season, it'll be a toss of a coin. You're probably going to have, I mean, unless you maintain this run and can force your way into the top two, you're probably going to be in the lottery of the playoffs. I'd probably argue that if you were to go up in a year's time, you'd probably be in a better position to do better in the championship. We've seen it so many times with sides who bounce back up when they're maybe they're not quite, you know, well set. Look at Wigan, who are probably set to return back to League One for the third time in 5 years. But yeah, I think you're on the right track. I think this is a much better side than the one you had this time last year. Now that you're not reliant on a pretty disruptive character in Aidan McGeady, he's obviously a big positive. And I'm delighted that Oxford legend Chris Maguire is back amongst the goals.
Chris Maguire's doing well. He's ever the inconsistent, but I mean, he's obviously like similar to what you were talking about, Marcus Brown. On his day, he's unplayable. You know, he's got some great skills to him. But I think, I definitely agree with what you're saying there with a lot of the points you've made. I think more than anything, I think that our concern is that at the end of the season, if we do get promoted, we've got a lot of people on short-term contracts or contracts.
Yeah.
We've got a lot of people who are being high paid, etc. still. And it's kind of, you know, there's a little bit of talk around the sort of the houses really about if we even were to get promoted, who the hell's going to be in our squad, you know, and where's this investment coming from in order to get that. So yeah, there's a bit of worry about it, but no, it's nice to see that, you know, from people from the outside are looking at it and seeing that we are turning it around at least a little bit for now, and there's positives coming out of it, because there's certainly a bit more positive feeling about the club.
Yeah, I mean, I think in terms of like, you know, if you've got players, you know, O'Neill, Willis, Gooch, these are all guys who are, if it's with Sunderland or not, are probably, you know, going to make the step up fairly soon, given the way they're progressing and the age they are. So that's got to be a positive position you're in, unlike last season where there weren't really that, I mean, I know that O'Neill was there, but there wasn't really that core. So it feels to me like you're in a better position as a club. And I know that the relationship with the owner has taken a massive hit in the last 12 months. But on the pitch, at least, it does feel like you're in a better spot. If you compare it to last season, the guys who are your crucial players now are the right kind of guys. They're the guys who are on their way, you know, the trajectory is upwards, rather than, you know, 33-year-old wingers who are still on, you know, big wages.
I think that's the big thing that's changed. You know, like you say, those people, the core of the team has changed. And I think Parky's done that. And we've got to give him credit for it, regardless of what happens, really. But
yeah.
Final thing then, I won't keep you much longer. We always do a score prediction. What do you think for Saturday? How do you think it's going
to
go?
Has to be 1-1. I can't not predict 1-1.
Not another 1-1.
I mean, it wouldn't surprise me at all if it is 1-1. I feel like we're two sides who are fairly solid at the back. I mean, I would say with the Peterborough result, given, you know, we lost 4-0 to a team who, I think Peterborough and their current guys are the best team we've seen in the league this season.
Yeah.
And we went there 4 days after playing 120 minutes against Premier League side. So even when Jordan Thompson was sent off in that game at 2-0, I had absolutely no expectation of us coming back into it, and we lost it 4-0. So I'd probably put a line through that result, if not the other poor result. If you put a line through that, it's been, even when we've been poor, we haven't been well beaten by anyone. So I'd say it'll be fairly tight. And I'll say 1-1 and 1 point.
Are you going to go for any scorers or?
Mags never turns up against us, which is probably going to change one day. I mean, it would break my heart to see him scoring, and I just hope he wouldn't try and goad us, because he's my favourite ever player. So I'll say not anyone but Maguire and Marcus Brown for us.
I think I'm gonna try and break the mold of the 1-1. And sort of shoot for the positive 2-1 to us. I think.
I think
basically we're coming off a 3-0. We've got goals coming, but I think, like you say, you guys are hard to break down. So to get two would be a bit of a struggle. But I think we'll get there. I think we're difficult. We're very difficult to break down. Our defence has been really good. Lots of clean sheets at the moment, except for the Portsmouth game, which we'll draw a line under. But yeah. Draw a line through. But I again, you know, listening to you then, and as I say, doing the research leading up to chatting to you today, I did look at the kind of attacking players, and despite looking at stats and goals, which I love all the stats and kind of all the stuff you can get these days around the science of football. But more than anything, you know, like you say, the unpredictability of someone like Marcus Brown, looking at our players might just be our undoing a little bit. So yeah, I think you'll definitely nick one, but I'll go with 2-1 just to try and be positive since we're on Redwood Port
yeah,
right now.
Fair enough.
I kind of can't go down.
I feel like I should have said 2-1 as well now. But no, I'll keep it at 1-0. I think when we spoke, I did this last year with Roka, and I said 1-0 there, and I got it right. So I'll stick to my guns. Yeah.
Brilliant. Thanks, George. Thanks for your time.
No worries, mate.
And yeah, fingers crossed that it's an enjoyable day for all anyway.
Yeah, fingers crossed. I mean, I hope that the weather forecast is absolutely terrible. So safe journey down for everyone, and hopefully the game's on and you haven't all left only to find out that it's off. Yeah.
Storm Dennis or whatever, isn't it?
Yeah, I mean, it looks absolutely horrific. So, and I went to, we played Ipswich during not Storm Kira, the one before that, whatever that was called, and it was nearly abandoned halfway through, and it was 0-0, and basically neither team had a shot because it's a wind tunnel with only three stands. So look forward to that.
Yeah, well, if that is on, then with that weather, it could be a 0-0 all over it. With nothing able to be done, and in a horrible game to watch. And
exactly. Perfect. What a way to spend a Saturday.
Yeah. Great. Thanks, George. I'll let you go. Thanks very much.
Mate. Okay, mate. Cheers. Thank you.
John Stacey there talking to George Elek.
Have we got any score predictions for Saturday? What's going to happen?
Might sneak a 2-1.
I'm going for 2-1. I'm going this weekend. I'm going for 2-1.
Yeah, 2.
They have a terrible defensive record, but don't they?
They're in a bad run of form.
A few suspensions and injuries. I mean, but like, we don't do things the easy way. It's generally always a scrappy 1-0, unlike last night.
Yeah, we've got 2 home games after this game, right?
Bristol Rovers next Saturday anyway.
Yeah,
I think we're Fleetwood.
Yeah, and then it's Coventry away after that.
Saturday will tell us whether we're going to go up or not. If we win on Saturday, that's going to give everybody a bit of confidence that we are really heading in the right direction.
Yeah,
it's good momentum at the moment. We just need to keep it going.
That's right, 3-0.
What's your predictions, actually? What's your predictions for the end of the season, as of now, what do you think? Well, so, like, one at a time. So, like, Martin, where do you think we're going to end up end of the season?
Right now, I think playoffs. In a month's time, I might think differently. I think the Oxford game and the Coventry game, especially, are going to really tell us if we have enough to go up automatically. I think that bad run when Parkinson first came in might hamper our automatic chances. But nobody's running away with it. Like, nobody's really sort of steaming ahead. I think if you look at the average points per game that teams are accumulating, nobody's kind of nailing it in the minute. So any team that's going to go in a good run of form between now and the end of the season, who's currently in the top 7 or 8, it'll go up, I think. So I'm going to hedge my bets and say playoffs. But yeah, I think the Coventry game and what we do in between now and then will determine where we finish.
Okay, you're going to play. Paul, where do you going to finish?
I've got a sneaky feeling we're going to win at Wembley, you know. Which is mental. I've just got this.
That means I'm going to have to fly over.
Sort of like Netflix, sort of series 3, sort of Parkinson, sort of villain to hero. I think we give ourselves too much to do from like Boxing Day onwards, really. So I would take a Wembley playoff final right now.
You're in playoffs, and Michael.
I'm actually quietly confident we're gonna nab that second position. But as the lads are saying, the next few weeks are really important. But like, to be fair, because we've had such a terrible run. Just before Christmas and up to Christmas, every game is vital now. Like, we actually can't really go into any game and it's not a must win, you know. Like, it's just the way it's gone for us. But I think we have the squad, and I was even Luke O'Neill and Denver Hume came into the business lounge after the game, and they were talking about just like how they're so confident going into every game now, and they feel that they're fitter than every team. They think they'll run every team into the ground. And they know they'll get the results, but that kind of inspired me with a bit of confidence. But I genuinely think the automatics are up for grabs. I think Portsmouth are the best team in the league. They'll probably win it out, but I think it's second place is there for the taking if we really want it.
Yeah, I think we'll do second. I think we'll go up automatically. I don't want the playoffs again.
No way.
But Wembley's just rubbish. I don't want to go back to Wembley.
Yeah, law of average.
It would be nice to win, nice to win there, wouldn't it? It would be nice to win there.
We've got to win there at some point.
We don't win at Wembley.
It's like England penalty shootout. It's like law of averages, you've got to win one.
Yeah, fair enough.
Yeah.
I'd rather just avoid it if you can.
Me and Paul will see you at Wembley.
Yeah.
I'm still going. Don't get me wrong. I'm still going. If I get a ticket, I'll still go. All right, moving on into our favourite game of playing away. Now, we all know the rules by now, so I won't go through them as I usually do, but winner gets 2 points, and at some point we'll catch up and find out who's actually leading this thing. And I think actually Paul and Martin, I think you both have won previously, haven't you?
Yeah, I've
got a winner. So you're both, you are going to be...
The big question, Brett, is... the big question is, have you got a duck quack to signify that we've got 15 seconds?
No, I haven't got a duck quack.
I enjoyed Rich's duck quack on the last one.
I like leaving it, you lot hanging and having to fill dead air and trying and certain people over talking and giving games away. How you doing, Mike?
Won't be me, would it? Won't be me, would it?
Right. So today's game, it's a Valentine's special. Valentine's Day 2004. We drew 1-1 with Birmingham City. It was actually a cup game in the FA Cup. We are wearing our Nike red and white kit with Reg Vardy sponsor. It's that red and white one that had the sort of like the back, lower half of the back was red. Although that kind of helps at all. But yeah, so Mick McCarthy is manager. We're in 2004. Martin, I've got your name down first, so I'll let you give a pick.
Excellent. Well, I think this was a FA Cup game.
It was.
I think if I'm right in thinking this, I think it's the first game after Bob Stokoe died. But I think there was a minute silence before the game.
Wow, that is niche.
you don't get a point for that, unfortunately.
Oh, come on. I think Kevin Kyle scored our goal.
Well done. Kevin Kyle scored our goal. Good work.
Wow.
So, Paul, got any little facts about the game?
No, nothing. Absolutely nothing. I've got a name. Gonna go with it. Dean Whitehead.
Dean Whitehead was not playing that day. And just can I point out that had I given you 15 seconds and Richard's duck quack, we wouldn't have heard that about Bob Stokoe.
Yeah. So he's probably taking his girlfriend out Valentine's Day.
Right. Next one then. So you've got Michael Dunn. You're up, sir.
Okay, 2004, Mick McCarthy. I won't say any names.
You sort of do have to say a name, yeah.
Yeah. No, I won't say more than one name. It's generally what I do in this game. I'll go for an Irish guy around that time, McAteer.
Jace McAteer is playing. Back to you, Martin.
Very good. Right. I think in the replay, Tommy Smith scored for us, so I'm going to go for Tommy Smith.
He was on the bench.
Oh, well, there you go. That's
so you don't lose a life under the new rules.
Oh.
We'd have to guess again either, so it's up to Paul. You need to get one or you're out.
Yeah, mate, this is a poor sort of era for me. 2004. Not sure if he was playing. Sort of similar to Whitehead, really. Liam Lawrence?
Liam Lawrence was not playing. You are out. I think you're the first person to actually drop back in.
Yeah.
Or did Bomber do it last week, actually? Do you?
Really? Thank God for that.
I'm sure Bomber may have done it.
Yeah, I've got names in here, but yeah. Sorry, lads.
Michael Dunn, you're up.
Oh, this is tough as well. Okay. Oh, my God. Carl Robinson.
Wow, Carl Robinson is not playing. So you've lost a life.
That was my next name, actually.
So, Martin, back to you.
All right, well, I'm going to go for Jeff Whitley.
Jeff Whitley was playing. So, Michael, so far we've had Jeff Whitley, Jason McAteer, Kevin Kyle, and Tommy Smith named on the bench.
Okay, so we have the centre. I'm trying to think of centre halves we had around that stage. Austin, the Swedish lad we have. Bjorklund, is it?
Yep, Joachim Bjorklund.
Bjorklund, yeah.
He's playing in defence.
Is he playing?
Oh, yeah, he's there. Good one, that one. So, Martin.
Well, at that time, another centre-half, Gary Breen.
Gary Breen's partnered him in centre back. So you've got Bjorklund and Gary Breen centre halves. Michael, you're up.
Forgot an obvious one there. My favourite player at the time. Is Julio playing?
Julio's playing, of course he is.
Yeah.
Julio's there. Back to Martin.
Let's have a think. Was goalkeepers a toss-up between two? Was Poom in goal?
Poom's in goal. Back to Michael. I've only one life left. It's pretty much sudden death every time you go now, Michael.
Yeah. I'm struggling now. So can you just give us the names there quickly?
Poom's in goal. You've got Gary Breen and Bjorklund in the defence. You've got Jeff Whitley, Jason McAteer, Kevin Kyle and Julio Arca.
Okay. We had this chap on loan, I think. You remember Darren Carter? Was he around that time?
If he was, he wasn't playing. You are out. So, Martin, you've won again. I don't need a duck to do 15 seconds. It's doing really hard. Your team was. So you had Mark Poom, Stephen Wright. I'm amazed you didn't get this, Michael. George McCartney. You always get the Irish ones.
I always get the Irish ones.
Jeff Whitley, Gary Breen, Joshen Bjorklund, John Oster, which I thought might have been a bit of a hard one.
I wouldn't remember that one.
Jason McAteer, Kevin Kyle, Marcus Stewart was the other striker, Julio Arca. And then you had on the bench was Ben Arwick, Darren Williams, your mate from the weekend, Paul Thirlwell, and Sean Thornton. And obviously Tommy Smith.
Oh, I'm raging now. I should have got at least two of those.
That was a quick one.
Right. Moving on, though, it is, as always, I'll put up when I'm on anyway, I always put a little plug on Twitter, my set of questions, and just see what comes back. And as always, I hit gold. So some great ones that have come through. We've got still people challenging for the biggest losing runs. For some reason, we don't have many people on winning streaks. It's all about like defeats for us for some reason. I think, though, Joe Brown could be it. He's been to about 30 away games and never seen a league win. Only seen us beat Birmingham 3-0 in the Cup. Best results included 1-1 v the Mags and a 0-0 v Burnley. 30 away games from Joe
Brown.
That's
some run, that, mind.
I did actually message him back to make sure he wasn't going to Oxford at the weekend, because that's a terrible run.
That is shocking.
We had another guy, Adam Reek, who's gone 10 years. Had to wait nearly 10 years to see us win away for the second time. So on the 2007, he saw us beat Sheffield Wednesday 4-2. He didn't see us win again until 2016, when we beat Norwich 3-0 away.
It's incredible.
But we keep coming back. We keep going back for more. And there was another one, Kieran Harrison. He said it was 19 games like before he actually saw his first win. So even before he even just started seeing the lads, 19 games to see a win. That was Derby Way 2006. Only seen us win once at the Stadium of Light against Bradford last year, which should not have been. I think that must have been the Boxing Day game where we had that goal. It was in, but it didn't count. So, also, Kieran's like, I think all his family sort of jumped on this and reminded him how like unlucky he has been over the years. So, yeah, good losing runs, I suppose, there, lads. Bringing your partner to a game, I had one for Max Balfour, who took his current long-term partner to a first home game to Palace 4 years ago. So I actually forgot all about this game. 0-0 at half-time. He promised her goals in the second half. After 60 minutes, we were 4-0 down. Glenn Murray turned to Messi after the break. And I actually looked it up. Palace scored four goals in 14 minutes.
That Bellassi, you got a hat-trick, wasn't it?
Yeah. That game, I must have just erased it from my memory, because I had to look it up to see like the goals and stuff. God, it was a terrible one. Another last two was meeting players in random places. Martin Wiggum met Kenny Cunningham in Tesco Durham once, and he's got a photo of him at the checkout. And then Bucky Brown bumped into Super Kev when he was playing for Southampton at the Fun Fair. I was wearing my stripes, and he asked me if there's any hard feelings about him moving. He was a nice chap, though. But I think Kevin Phillips was quite short, and like I'm sure Fun Fairs are quite hard for him to go to because those height restrictions, he's not getting on anything. Those were your letters this week. Please get in touch as always. Love hearing about these. There's some really good ones coming through. I have a mention as well for the Sunderland ladies. They are in the FA Cup on Sunday, 2 p.m. at Eppleton. If you're about, head over there, support the girls. They're doing really, really well at the moment. So, good to have a good cup run from them.
Fred, can I just say one thing there?
Yeah, of course.
I meant to say it earlier on. It's credit to the lads that work at Sunderland, the supporters, liaison officers, like Chris Waters, James Wallace, and Jamie Lauder. Just to thank them on behalf of the Irish Supporters Club. The way the organisation for the weekend was brilliant. And I think sometimes the lads get a raw deal. You know, they're generally the ones who bear the brunt of all the abuse and on the Twitter and social media. But yeah, they credit where credit's due to them. They really organise a great weekend. And I think they deserve more credit than what they get maybe sometimes because they do a really, really good job.
Chris Waters, I had quite a lot of dealings with him when it came to Wembley tickets. Previously, there was an issue with my account. And he was really, really helpful.
He's a gentleman.
He was. At one point, I had about 10 different numbers attached to my name and my kid. I've only got two kids, but I had about 10 numbers attached to them, both of them.
Wow.
But he was really, I know he was working like weekends and stuff up until the final. He was really, really helpful. I've dealt with him over emails and stuff, but he was a really, really good guy, actually. So,
okay, I think it's one of the best signings someone I've ever made was him, to be fair.
I also, actually, I'm sure, do you not want to give your mate a mention, actually, after you scored your goal on Saturday about the half-time challenge last night? Was that your mate who completely...
Gary's the chap who nutmegged the guy and then fell on his face straight after. he actually stayed. He actually was going till Sunday, but he was having such a good time that he just said, all right, I'll scrap it. I'll stay till Wednesday for the Rochdale game and then flew out from Edinburgh this morning.
Awesome.
Himself and Shane, yeah.
So it was
a great weekend, in fairness. It was really, really good. Like, I mean, I didn't really want to leave either, but you have to get back to reality eventually.
So I said that they'll definitely be doing it again next year.
There'll be more people there, I'd say. Yeah,
it'll be absolutely massive. You can head over for it, Martin.
Oh, I'd like to. It's one of those things, timing-wise, haven't been over Christmas for a few weeks. It just didn't work out being so close to Christmas. But I think if it had been towards the end of the season, if it had been April or May this year, I would have certainly made the trip over. So hopefully if there's another one next year, I will be there.
Yeah, get you on the pitch with an Australian flag.
Half Australian, half English. I'll be pushing you over.
I'll beg you. It's fine.
Yeah.
Right then, boys, I think we'll leave it there.
Cool.
Paul, thank you very much, Brett, for your time.
Pleasure. Speak soon. Take care, guys.
Right. Martin, go clean up that cat mess.
Cheers, boys. I will. I'll think of you while I'm doing it.
Michael, pleasure as always, mate.
Thanks, mate. See you later.
Cheers. Take care, lads.
Cheers, boys.
Tired of ads interfering with your favorite sports podcasts? Good news. Ad-free listening is available on Amazon Music for all the music plus top podcasts included with your Prime membership. Stay ahead of the game by downloading the Amazon Music app for free or go to amazon.com/sportsadfree. That's amazon.com/sportsadfree to catch up on the latest episodes without the ads.
Hey everyone, Craig Robinson here. I want you to check out the Ways to Win podcast, brought to you by Ford and the new 2024 Ford F-150 truck. On Ways to Win, Coach Cal and I will discuss leadership lessons we've learned. We know all about the days spent perfecting your craft outside of the limelight and have knowledge to share about how strength, inspiration, encouragement, and adaptability are the key ingredients to drive toward your dreams. And those same ingredients can be found in the new 2024 Ford F-150 truck. So check out my podcast, Ways to Win, and also check out the new 2024 Ford F-150 truck. Learn more at Ford.com. Built Ford tough, built Ford proud.